Hello, and welcome to Grace Unscripted, where we share stories of the people in and around Grace Church without any script, just real, raw conversations about life change through Jesus. I'm your host, Audrey Wallace, and today's guest is Cheryl Reed. Now, you may recall a couple episodes ago, we interviewed Jeff Reed. This is his wife, Cheryl, and I'm so excited for you to hear her story. The word that surfaced for me as I listened to the stories she shared is empowering. She spent her life empowering people to do their calling. She took her calling to serve, and she used it to empower other people to do incredible things despite some limitations that they have in their lives. So listen to Cheryl's story and enjoy. Cheryl, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks for staying up this evening with us. We had some fun conversation around night owls and early birds, and yes. We're on opposite sides of the spectrum here.
Thanks
for night owling with me here tonight. But yes, I'm very curious to get to know you. So for reference for our listeners, we have your husband already has an episode. So if you haven't heard that one yet, folks, make sure to cue that one up as well. But I'm excited to hear your story as well.
Good.
It's one of my favorite things when we have couples and we kind of see how the threads intertwine with one another.
Try not to make it competitive.
Ooh, are you a competitive person? I can tell by that look in your eye right now. Awesome. Okay, well, very curious to know, did you grow up in the Akron area? How did your life begin?
I sure did. I grew up in the West Akron area.
Yay, that's right.
According to my mother, I was born with a passion for horses, and that has continued throughout my whole life.
Okay. Now, horses in West Akron. Did you have a horse growing up?
So I will tell you about that in just a moment.
Yeah.
So I went to Akron Public Schools, Perkins, Buchdahl, graduated from Copley, however. I was always passionate about horses, and I told my mother when I was 11 or 12 that I was going to buy a horse. I lived in West Akron in the city. Mm-hmm. And she said, okay. And then Cheryl proceeded to babysit and collect money. And when I had $30, I looked in the Yellow Pages, found different boarding barns and places that sold horses, and found a pony for $30.
You did not?
Yeah.
How old were you?
12.
Oh, my gosh. If only.
And then I made some phone calls and found somebody that would keep them for me for nothing, right off of White Pond Drive.
Uh-huh.
And there was some guinea hens and a bull back there and my pony. And my mom would drop me off in the morning. And every day that I wasn't in school, I would just be there with my sack lunch and my pony.
Wow. Can I ask a very ignorant question? Mm-hmm. Is a pony a baby horse, or is that a different thing than what a horse is?
Yes, a pony is 42 inches or smaller, and that would be full grown.
Full grown. Okay, so it is a separate thing. Okay, so you had a pony.
Yeah.
Kind of like every little girl's dream, but you earned it.
Yeah, and I think that's why it stuck with me, because I've always had to work hard for it.
Mm.
So then when I was about 15, I no longer had the pony anymore, and I convinced my grandfather to loan me $200, and I bought a horse for $200.
Wow.
When Jeff and I met, that's when I was in graduate school. I came with a graduate school loan and a horse, and he knew that that was part of the package.
That was you and your horse, like
yeah,
always.
Yeah, then
be.
We came together.
Yes. And how? What's his take on horses?
Well, he got a horse for himself once that he hardly ever rode, so he enjoys them more as pets, and he's a great supporter. I mean, I can no longer lift 50, 60-pound bales of hay and straw, so that's what keeps him in shape.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I've heard Jeff Bogue say, if you love me, then you love Heidi. We're a package deal, so we come together, and that's kind of like you and your horse. Like, if you love Cheryl, you love her horse.
That's
package deal.
Yeah.
And your love of horses as well.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So tell me a little bit more childhood, a lot of horse influence. Was your family involved in a church? Did you have any faith upbringing?
Yeah, so we went to Firestone Presbyterian Church for a while, then we went to Westminster Presbyterian Church. And then probably in my latter years of high school, went to the chapel.
Hmm.
When I was 12 years old, I can remember sitting in the living room with my Aunt Helen. And she was a very strong Christian.
Hmm.
And she prayed with me, and that's when I first accepted Christ.
Hmm.
I can remember she gave me a Bible that was gray, and it was called The Good News for Modern Man, and it had stick figures in it.
Really?
And so that was probably the first Bible I read.
Interesting. Yeah. And did you read it? Like, you were a teenage girl and you read the Bible you were given?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Were you, like, in a youth group and, like, this is an active part of your
life?
Yeah,
we were in youth group. When I say we, my siblings also. I was very quiet and an introvert, the opposite of my sister, Debbie. Many people know my sister, Debbie, who also goes here. And so I always preferred just being around animals rather than being around people. Mm. And that has kind of continued throughout my life, although I've kind of learned to overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I graduated from Copley. I then started at the University of Akron. I changed my major 3 times. And each time I changed my major, then I have to catch up over summer school. So I went to Akron U 5 years straight. Ended up with a pre-med degree. And then I had to decide what to do with that. So, as you might imagine, the first thing I wanted to do was go to veterinary school.
Of course, that's what I was
expecting. And somehow my 3.78 GPA wasn't good enough, and so they said, go back and get a master's degree. So then I looked at dentistry and podiatry, and somehow ended up in optometry, probably because they said, yeah, you can start, you know, right away. Mm-hmm. And I went right from finishing summer school and my undergrad degree to optometry school.
Okay.
At Ohio State University.
Oh, nice.
Back then, there weren't too many women in the medical fields. And so, you know, there were just a few of us in that class that were female. And it's a 4-year program. Maybe even the second or third year, I'm like, I'm not sure that this is my passion either.
Mm.
So it just so happened that there was a rehab center for blind and visually impaired just down the street from where Ohio State University was. And then they started, in affiliation with Ohio State, a new low-vision clinic to serve blind and visually impaired. I was the very first student to rotate through that, and it was just like I found myself.
Mm.
So at that time, they didn't have residency in that specialty area, and so I just went to the director of the clinic, and I said, I want to get as much experience in this area as possible. So I saw a lot of patients. And I just, that was just my love and my passion. So I went from teaching at the College of Optometry for a while as a clinical instructor, but always in low vision. And then I just moved on to working as the sole doctor in that clinic, helping students learn about this field.
Mm. Can you explain to me what the difference is? This clinic that you found, what was different about that versus what you were already learning in?
So to me, I wanted to do something meaningful. And yeah, it's meaningful to give somebody a pair of glasses or diagnose an eye condition or fit a contact lens on a person. But when someone is losing their eyesight or their child is losing their eyesight, that's really a very difficult time.
Mm.
And the way the clinics are that I have established or worked at, you spend a minimum of 3 hours with a patient, so you really get to know that person.
Wow.
You also get to share Jesus with them and pray with them sometimes. So it was just my passion. I also worked with multiply handicapped kids while I was still a student, and then that kind of developed as well. I'll tell you more about that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that time, Ohio was one of the first states to start a pilot program that allows visually impaired individuals to drive legally. So I was in on the ground floor of that. So over my 40 years of practice, I either established or expanded low vision clinics in Cleveland, Columbus, Elyria, and 2 in the Akron area. And it was a very difficult type of practice because every single practice I've had, you can't make any money in that field. So obviously, I certainly accepted the fact that working for a non-for-profit was truly a non-for-profit for me. Mm-hmm. And many of the clinics folded because of financial reasons. So maybe three of them folded during the time I was in practice. But my passion just kept me going so far as getting more involved in fundraising. I also did a lot of teaching. Many ophthalmologists and optometrists did a rotation through my clinics over the many years. And the two areas that were unique for my office was, A, I saw a lot of children, even infants and toddlers, who are visually impaired. Normally, a low-vision clinic, you think of an older person, but yes, there are children that are either born with or have vision problems that can lead to low vision or blindness. So I serve patients from all over Ohio in that area. The other thing is the driving program. It's called the Bioptic Driving Program. Bioptic refers to the fact that you use a bioptic telescope. A bioptic telescope is a pair of glasses with a miniature telescope mounted in the top of them. And the person learns to tip their head down and look through that telescope to see signs in like a fraction of a second. Think of the way you would quickly look at a speed limit sign. How long do you look at it a second? But they have to learn to tilt their head, direct their gaze, and then look at that. So there are only two clinics in Ohio. There only have been two clinics in Ohio, my clinic and Ohio State University, that were approved by the Bureau of Motor Vehicles to both evaluate an individual to see if they're a candidate for the program, to fit the telescopes, and then to do the training with the telescopes. And then we needed a driving school to do the in-car training. And then I also had to train state highway patrol examiners to do the extensive testing for these. So I could talk about that for a really long time. But
that's got to be a passion project for somebody, you know, with all those barriers that you're stating
right
there.
The barriers are phenomenal.
You have to.
That program had to be re-evaluated by the Bureau of Motor Vehicles every 2 years. And then I'll kind of jump to my retirement. So I loved what I did, and I always said I'm going to work until I dropped out on the job. I mean, I just loved it so much. But then, you know, God has his way of planning things differently, and I started having some health issues. And then I realized, you know, this program's going to go on, I've got to start planning. So fortunately, I had a lot of contacts because of the students and residents I worked with, and I would get on the phone and say, hey, are you interested? You did really well when you, you know, seemed to have a passion for it. Do you have any interest? Well, I did find a doctor that wanted to work with me part-time, and then things did not go well in the other practice that she was in, and she ended up accepting my position and spent 2 years with me before I retired. Well, then the person was doing the in-car training that started Edwin Shaw Hospital. Edwin Shaw became a part of Akron General. And I guess Akron General then became a part of Cleveland Clinic. But through all that, we had a couple of individuals who were occupational therapists and had the certification to do the driving training. And that person had to be certified too. Well, wouldn't you know it, they retired about when I did. And their hospital no longer supported that. So then what was I to do? So then I really just contacted directors of all the different driving schools in our area and finally found a driving school that was already working with individuals who were hearing impaired or deaf and knew how to work with the funding sources that I worked with visually impaired, and they then got approved for that. So in my absence now, that program does continue, which is just, like I said, God works in unusual ways. Because if I waited, that program, I might not have been able to put all that into place.
Sure, yeah.
Then the other fun thing was that when I was 53, I got a scholarship to return to Ohio State University and pursue my graduate studies in orientation and mobility. And that is to teach individuals who are blind or visually impaired cane travels and other travel skills. That got me more involved in higher education. And so I was asked to be really much in an advisory capacity for the Dean's Compact for Exceptional Children. That is a group of deans of higher education that had special education programs, and I advised on developing new programs for teachers of the visually impaired and orientation and mobility, because nationally we have a shortage of those kinds of educational specialists. And then I also served in an advisory capacity for OCDBE, that's the Outreach Center for Deaf Blind in Ohio. So, yeah, so I just had so many amazing opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of optometry as an eye doctor, but the things I did brought me into the field of, you know, driving and education and things like that. So it was really amazing.
Are there any stories you can share? You mentioned a 3-hour appointment with a patient and you get to share Jesus with them. Are there any stories you can share of something like
that? So I will tell you, I estimate that I had probably at least 6 pastors that were patients of mine over the years, that they're driving, help them to continue to work in their field. In fact, one I just saw, he did a video of, you know, what my clinic has done for him and has allowed him to continue to serve and share Jesus with people. When I was looking through some of my old things, thank you notes and articles and things I had written, I found a picture of a young lady who had been a patient of mine, probably starting in middle school or high school. And when she saw I was retired, she sent me a she became a bioptic driver, and she sent me a picture of herself. She's a special educator, and she continues to work. And then 3 mixed-race children that she had then adopted. And she just said, you know, without you guiding me through all this, I couldn't have done what I'm doing today. And, yeah, so I just have so many, I mean, so many stories of, you know, working with the parents who have just found out that their child, you know, is visually impaired and they don't know where to turn. So the kind of reports that I would do after evaluating that child would be to really explain almost in a lay term way how and what that child sees, advocate for what special services they should request, you know, write it in such a way so that all that child's, all the teachers or specialists that work with that child kind of understands how what the child might see, whether it be central vision loss, so their vision appears blurred and they can't read print, how big do the things need to be and what kind of modifications do they need to make? Or a child who has a homonymous hemianopia where they have no vision on one side due to a stroke, how does that affect their ability to walk into a classroom, to get to a classroom? And lots of opportunities. When someone is crying or dying, those are the moments God gives us. Some other fun stories. I had two individuals that were philanthropists that kind of followed me through my Akron clinic, and without them, I would not have been able to continue. So one of them developed a very aggressive cancer, and every week I would send her, she only lived maybe 2 or 3 months after it was diagnosed, every week I would send her a note about an adult or child that I helped in a scripture verse. Years later, and then I probably will cry. Years later, her husband said, those are one of the few things I've saved is all the notes and all the scriptures that I found in her purses when I went through them. And I believe I'll see her in heaven someday.
Yeah, so she was storing those.
Yeah. And then the other one was the other person who was really involved in my clinics. He passed away, and his wife survived him, and she contacted Jeff. You might have heard this story, saying, I need your help. And my late husband said, if you ever need any help, contact Jeff Reed. And this was like 10 years later. And because of Jeff's help, it has had huge impact on her legacy and ways that she has, in her will, left money to bring other people to Christ in our country and all over the world. So, you know, God puts those things together. There's no doubt about it. Another story I'll tell you, this is funny, and I think God showed his sense of humor with this.
You know, I love those kinds of stories.
So, what I did, so I was the only eye doctor in all of the United States that also was an orientation and mobility specialist.
Can you explain what that is? Because you've said that a couple times, and I've pretended, sitting here pretending I know what that means.
Orientation mobility?
Yes.
That is a person who has had the education and I guess it's licensure to teach individuals who are blind and visually impaired either to use a cane to travel, use technology to help them travel safely, learn to use their hearing to evaluate traffic and kind of line up. So one way that you could, I bet you've never even thought of this. Do you know when you're in a parking lot or a sidewalk, you see those truncated dome plates? So you teach a person when they're walking with a cane to be able to feel with that cane when they approach those. That's going to tell them that you have approached either a parking lot or an intersection. And then you teach them, because those aren't always placed right, how to evaluate by listening the traffic patterns. And I did not do that type of work as much as I did the other type of work. But obviously I used, you know, that to some degree. But so there aren't that many in Ohio, honestly. In northeastern Ohio, there are probably maybe a half dozen, maybe eight orientation mobility specialists. So in the visual impairment field, we just have well, you can say that about other areas, too. Just not enough of those special certifications. Or
especially with this passion that it takes to do it, because you're serving and you've said nonprofit and these implications that come alongside
it's very
of it.
Difficult to, to and then the other specialty area is a teacher of the visually impaired, and that is a person who is licensed to teach Braille and work with children who are visually impaired in the school system.
Okay.
So that's another specialty area. Oh, my funny story. Okay,
back
so I got distracted.
Yes,
so, I told you about the orientation mobility. Well, so... And you know about my passion for horses. Oh, I know I was starting to tell you is how unusual it is to do what I do. Okay? And then the other thing that's really unusual is blindness in horses. So adventitious blindness, blindness that occurs later in life in horses, is pretty common. Born blind horses is ridiculously uncommon. In fact, none of the vets that I know ever had worked with, seen a foal who was born blind. Well, God in his wisdom, when I purchased a pony about 25 years ago, I did not know she was pregnant. And she surprised me with a baby who was born totally blind.
What?
No, that's why I said.
You, like, yeah. Born to you, blind like passion, it. Horse passion, and you get this.
Yeah.
Okay, so
how his name was Magoo.
Okay.
And I had to figure out how to help him to be safe. Jeff wrapped bubble wrap around some places around the barn that he was running into, mm-hmm. and then I needed to let him go out with the other horses eventually out into a big pasture with, you know, hills and fencing and trees. So I'm like, I just have to let him out with the mare, the mother. And that didn't work out because he would just scream and she wouldn't respond. And I didn't know how to make it so that he could learn and be safe. So found an old transistor radio, put it around the mare's neck, and had it really loud. He always knew where she was. Mm. So he listened to a lot of baseball games and music. And eventually he learned where everything was, and I could slowly reduce the volume and then take it off of her. And nobody could believe that he was blind because he would just race through that pasture because he had everything memorized.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that instinct of a wild animal to actually set in with something like that, that's incredible.
So he just learned, listened, had it memorized. Yeah. Mm. So,
wow. Yeah. And then you were able to raise him and,
And he lived his so life. In 2020, the mare that he so depended upon got very, very sick. I had to put her down, and I also had to put Magoo down. That was his name. Mm-hmm. He was 17 years old. She was about 30. Wow. So then I suddenly had to get a friend for my very aged horse, who was so lonely, and I went to a rescue and thought I was going to come home with a pony, and I came home with a mule instead. And then that started another adventure because I got thrown from him a couple times. Okay. Mules are different than horses, but that's been an adventure, and I've learned a lot. I've published a couple of articles in Western Mule Magazine about my experience going from horses to mules. And So.
Did you do that on purpose, or you got this mule and you didn't? I mean, I imagine you knew that it was a mule, right?
I knew it was a mule. I didn't know just how different mules were than horses so far as training. So a mule is a donkey, male, bred to, you know, a female horse. And mules, excuse me, are sterile. So the only way you get a mule is by breeding a donkey and a horse. Mm-hmm. But they're part donkey and part horse, and donkeys are different. So, so it's been another adventure.
Just keep adding another to that equine list adventure. Of experiences. Wow. Has there ever been a time that you were able to intersect your visually impaired patients with horses as a form of therapy or any kind of thing like that?
No, I've had a lot of quite a few patients over the years that were equestrians. So my understanding of horses was helpful, but so far as bringing them to my farm and introducing them to my horses, no.
It's probably pretty dangerous.
That's the big thing. I mean, like it or not, I can go through all my injuries with horses. I mean, they are dangerous. Mm-hmm. So,
But somebody who would be an equestrian that was familiar with that perhaps before something like that onset, they would have a different experience, but not a wise thing to introduce.
Well, and there are programs that have, are designed to help, children with disabilities or blindness and things like that. But no. And really, Magoo was not always the safest to be around, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. So, we've talked a lot about your horse passion and vision passion and your Jesus passion mixed in with all of that and your family. Anything else that you want to share with our listeners about your perspective on
So what faith? I absolutely want to share is, I've walked with Jesus closer sometimes than others through my life since I was 12. In fact, it was funny, the other day I found an old Bible that I had when I was in graduate school, and that was a time that I kind of felt like I walked away a little bit. And from looking at those notes and all the underlining I did, I'm like, yeah, he was still there with me. And I was, but, you know, I think that's true of everybody, different places in their life. But Jeff and I both got baptized in 2012. And then we're both retired now. And it's just been amazing because both of us have had the time and the passion to just really say yes to everything God puts in front of us. So there have been a number of people that we've helped over the years and are still a big part of our lives, you know, difficult situations, but, you know, we feel very strongly God put them there. All the things that we're involved in at Grace, you know, both of us have been super, you know, saying yes to everything anybody has said to us to get involved. And we, it's, and then another thing that's kind of funny is I told you I am truly an introvert. But as a leader of a Jesus community now, I've just learned to be an extrovert. Meet people, hand out information, and I've had a couple people tell me, how do you do that? You know, that you just walk up to people you don't even know and just share Jesus and share this opportunity to get to know him better. So I think, you know, he's kind of helped me get over this shyness, I guess. I mean, that is my native personality, I would say.
Right, but he's transforming us all the time. As long as you're saying yes and stepping into what your part of the work is with that, and he's presenting the opportunities, and you have to still step into it.
You have to step into it. You have to say, I'm going to get outside my comfort zone. And I've heard Jeff talk about that many times. And that's when you grow the most is when you, you know, go beyond what you feel like you want to do or is easy for you to do.
Right, because if we stay in those natural, comfortable realms, then we do the natural, comfortable, expected thing versus where the unexpected is, and that's out on the water where our feet may fail, and we need him to keep us afloat and sustain us.
And the other thing I would encourage people to do is just reflect on your life. You know, it's easy when you're busy to not realize all the things he is doing every day. People that you meet, opportunities, challenges that you have. I mean, my favorite verse is that one in James where they talk about trials and tribulations. I mean, that those are the times you grow.
Right. Yeah. And it's, it can be something that we look at and say, why did you let this happen? And what we've been talking a lot about at Grace here recently is, what can you do with this, God, as the different question, as opposed to the why did you let this happen? Like, here it is. What can you do with this? How can I honor you in this? How can I know you more deeply? How can I show you more deeply to those around me? And it sounds like those are the questions.
And sometimes you look back and you say, God, you just carried me through those times, and I didn't even realize it. Jeff lost his job when the kids were 2 and 4. I had a 13-acre farm in Delaware, Ohio. Jeff took a job in Cleveland, and he lived there, and I lived in Delaware and had to keep the house clean and while we tried to sell it, and that went on for 9 months. I look back at that, and I say, how in the world did I do that? I had a practice and little kids and horses, and Jeff wasn't there.
But supernaturally sustained.
Yeah, I really think that, you know, that can happen.
Absolutely. Well, another thing we like to do on Unscripted is add to our Unscripted worship playlist. How has worship played a role in your life? Is this something that's a passion for you, or do you have to draw deeper from a well to find a worship song? And what song would you like to add to the list?
Jeff and I, neither one of us are into music that much, as much as we enjoy it. But so far as a song that is very meaningful to me is Amazing Grace. I did not have a very good relationship with my mother, and that created tension with my two sisters. And my mother had a colon rupture. We got a phone call that she was, surgery wouldn't help, and she would be passing in the next 48 hours. So my sisters and I were gathered around here, her, in her hospital bed, and we just started singing Amazing Grace. Mm. And she passed while we were in the midst of singing that song. And my brother-in-law, Dr. John Fink, who's passed since, was in the room, and he said, I couldn't believe that suddenly there was forgiveness and love beyond which I would ever understand, because he knew the difficulty of that situation. And that was just such a blessing, because I really do feel God's grace, you know, overwhelmed us during that time, and we had an abundance of forgiveness for either, you know, from Jesus and forgiving one another. And since then, our relationship has been really good. So I think about that experience every time I hear that song.
That's beautiful. That's exactly the kind of thing I love to have on this playlist, because you hear that song and it gives you that reflection back on that experience. And there's so many different ways that God can use the same song for different people. And I'm sure we all have our own, especially with a song like Amazing Grace, our own personal experience with a song like that. But that's pretty special. Well, thank you for sharing that. And thank you for sharing your story here with us.
Yes.
And if anybody heard any of this and shares a passion, or is retired and looking for a way to say yes, or is an introvert and looking for a way to overcome those things, or just wants to talk about horses, you know, Cheryl would love to speak with you. We can connect you. Our email address to connect with us is unscripted@graceohio.org. If you reach out to us there, then we can connect you with Cheryl or anyone here at the church, because we really that's the goal of all of this, is to share real, raw stories of life change through Jesus, like you've heard here in Cheryl's life, and help you to know him better and share with others too. So thanks for sharing.
Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.